The Arabs used to say, when a stranger appears at your door, feed him for 3 days before asking who he is, where he's come from, where he's headed. That way he'll have strength enough to answer, or by then you'll be such good friends, you don't care. Let's go back to that. Right? Kindness? Here, take the red brocade pillow. My child will serve water to your horse. No, I was not busy when you came. I was not preparing to be busy. That's the armor everyone put on to pretend they had a purpose in the world. I refuse to be claimed. Your plate is waiting. We will sniff fresh mint into your tea. The website said, questions? Call Doug. So, 4 days before camp started, I called Doug, the founder of the Nonviolent Communication Family Camp on Vashon Island. He answered the phone. Who answers the phone these days? I had two questions. One, is there still availability? Would there be room for two of us, me and my son Aaron? Doug said, yes, he would love to have you. Question number two, would camp be accessible for Aaron with his muscular dystrophy? Would it be flat enough for his wheelchair or electric scooter that he needs to go any significant distance? Doug asked me some questions to better understand and said, I think we can work this out. We've got a golf cart. We call it the horse because every farm needs a horse. I think we can use that to get Aaron around. And Aaron's eyes lit up at the idea of cruising around on a golf cart. So, because nonviolent communication is values-driven, with a core value being that all needs matter, I had a lot of confidence that we would be able to notice and address concerns as they arose, and because I am an eternal optimist, I said, okay, let's do it. So Aaron and I drove up I-5, took the ferry across Puget Sound, and arrived at camp, turning down the dirt road, driving under the hand-painted banners, Welcome, NDC Family Camp. Enthusiastic teens pointed us towards the place where we could drop our camping supplies. We parked, and a young man bounds up to our car and introduced himself as Axel. He said, we're Leslie and Aaron. We've been expecting you, he says. We've got a campsite safe for you right near the bathroom, and he starts hauling our stuff in that direction. Soon we're escorted to the registration table where more people greet us. Then the horse shows up. A very old, beat-up, but functional golf cart with a bench seat up front and a plywood back used for a hauling thing, which is typically the horse's primary function, or for teenagers apparently joyriding. But that didn't happen this year. Axel gives us a whirlwind tour of camp and tells us the horse is ours for the week. Occasionally he'll need it for some camp duties, but otherwise it's all ours. Here, take the red brocade pillow. I was not busy when you came. Let me build your tent and blow up your air mattress. I felt totally overwhelmed and also totally welcomed and included. And then, in a couple of hours, the opening ceremony came, which involved lining up in two lines, singing while walking to a large, sloping, uneven field where everyone in camp formed a standing circle. Not so inclusive. Aaron and I drove the horse in that direction and watched from higher up on the hill. And we talked about it later, me and some of the leaders of camp, and we kept learning together throughout the week ways to include Aaron. I kept advocating, I kept making requests, they kept listening and responding with varied ideas, and the closing circle happened on a flatter field with a specific plan for how Aaron and I would participate sitting in the golf cart or on the horse. It happened in a different place than it had been happening for the 13 previous years of camp, so Aaron could be in it. Now, I imagine that many folks in that circle felt a sense of loss, not having that same location to sing the song they'd always sung. And I also trust that each of those disappointed people would choose a flat field with Aaron in the circle again. It meant a lot to me. Here at Woof, I've heard many stories of people being warmly welcomed when they first came here. Of course, I've heard those stories from the people who are still here at Woof. What's the equivalent of the beloved steeply sloped rough terrain hill here at Woof? Do we have practices that are treasured but that might exclude people without our awareness? Certainly without our intention to exclude. Now, I can speak for our family. We moved here about a year ago and had a generally positive welcoming experience. But there are aspects of the Sunday service that don't resonate for each of us. And Sunday services here are very consistent, which means every Sunday we each get to feel our own sense of left outness. Are you wondering what doesn't work for us? You can probably make some guesses based on how I structured the service differently today. I imagine some of you might be still having some strong feelings about those changes. I took something out and put something else in. What was it? The joys and sorrows out, meditation in. So joys and sorrows, I think, is something that Unitarian Universalist congregations wrestle with. How inclusive is it? How exclusive is it? Because it, of course, can feel beautifully inclusive. And for those of you who are new and don't even know what I'm talking about, we often invite people to come up and light candles and express some joy or sorrow that's happening in their lives. And that can be beautifully inclusive, community building as we learn about each other. It can also feel kind of clubby and exclusive as we're listening to names of people we don't know, or we're listening to long details about someone's pet project or special interest. So joys and sorrows itself, upsides and downsides. Now for my husband, the thing that really gets him is the song after joys and sorrows, which to him sounds like a dirge. Only focused on kind of the sorrow side rather than the joy. And he's thinking, why don't we sing Come, Come, Whoever You Are to kind of show that full welcome of joys and sorrows? Now he's nervous that you're going to look at him every time we sing that song from now on. But I didn't get his permission to tell you that. For me, I actually don't feel like I've been to a worship service without some time of centering reflection and silence. So since prayer and meditation is not part of the standard order of service here at Woof, I leave each Sunday with that need unfulfilled. For Aaron, our son, who you might not even know who he is or what he looks like, is because he's sensitive and shy. And the idea of walking through that tunnel of hands with everybody singing and looking at him does not work for him. So he chooses to go straight to the RE classroom. And Sarah and his teachers generously and graciously accommodate that so that he has an experience of inclusion and not having to stretch so far to be part of the community. The title of today's sermon is Diversity and Inclusion, which is aligned with this month's theme. Diversity is pretty easy to achieve. If we get more than one person in a room, then we've got some diversity because no two people are alike, right? So we probably want to focus on inclusion, open-mindedness. Because if we get diversity, a wide variety of people with different ideas, different backgrounds, different cultures, different perspectives, and we're open-minded, that generates greater possibility, greater opportunities, lots of ideas, creativity. If we have diversity and closed-mindedness, then we end up with a lot of misunderstanding, miscommunications, conflict, and much lower effectiveness, much lower creativity. So when we don't have an inclusive environment, diversity makes it worse, less comfortable. Diverse people who collaborate and who appreciate each other outperform homogeneous groups. Diverse and closed-minded, non-collaborative folks underperform those homogeneous groups. So what matters is, are we open-minded in our diversity, or are we closed-minded in our diversity? So Steve Robbins is a cognitive neuroscientist who says that our brains are optimized to perform at their best when two root conditions are met. We're around other people, and those people care about us. That's when we're at our best. So why is this important for our human brains to be around other people? Well, as humans, for our size and weight, we are weak and slow. So if I were to drop an ant from here, that ant would walk away. If I were to drop a human from the equivalent distance, the human would not be walking away, right? We're kind of fragile and vulnerable beings. When we come out of the womb, we don't come out walking like the little baby horse, right? We need a lot of care for a long time. We are vulnerable. So we are hardwired to belong. It is really important to us to be highly thought of, because if the tribe values us less than other people, what's going to happen when they run out of food or water or decide to experiment with human sacrifice? It's not going to be good for us, right? So we really, really want to belong. And so we're also really always kind of looking to see who's in and who's out, who's part of the tribe, who's not. And we're assessing that, kind of whether we want to or not. That's also part of what's hardwired for us. And if we assess someone to be outside, we're going to make a lot of different decisions about who they are and how they are and what they do. So if I assess someone as an outsider and I learn that they're on food stamps, for example, I might classify them as lazy. If my friend, who is an insider, I find out is on food stamps, I'm going to say, oh, you're having a really hard time. Hard luck has come your way, and I'm so glad that that's there to support you. So it really affects how we think, what we attribute as people's qualities even. So this insider-outsider thing matters. And I'm guessing we've all had experiences of being the insider and being the outsider, right? So let me invite you to take a moment and remember a moment when you felt like an outsider. If you close your eyes so you can actually remember a moment when you really longed to be part of a group. There was a group that was important to you, that you thought it would be great to belong, that you don't have a sense that you're included, that they let you in. See if you can remember a specific instance. See those faces. Call your thoughts, your feelings. Tell me what some of those are. What's coming up for folks? Yeah, something must be wrong with me. What else? Other feelings or thoughts. Yeah.
I just have to work harder.
Oh, it's my problem. I have to work harder. Feelings, emotions?
I'm failing. I don't have enough money.
There's something that's keeping me out of here. What feelings come along with that?
Fear.
Inadequacy. Inadequacy.
Shame.
Shame.
Loneliness.
I heard anger, sadness, loneliness. Yeah. Okay, let's let that go. close your eyes again if you're willing and imagine a moment where you did feel like you belonged. You fit in, you're included, you're welcomed. Let yourself really be in that situation. See those faces, those smiling, welcoming faces. Feel those feelings. Tell me what some of these thoughts or feelings are.
Blessed.
Empowered.
Excited.
Having worth.
Safe.
Joyful.
Lucky.
Yeah, so lots of what we would call positive feelings. Gratitude when we're included. We can let both of those go now. But we know these feelings, right? And they're pretty big feelings coming from whether we assess ourselves to be inside or outside. And Steve Robbins, the neuroscientist, taught that this actually, they can see this in your brain. Even if you are playing just a simple game on a computer, it's called cyberball, and you're like throwing the ball to other people, but it's just on the screen. And at some point, you're throwing it back and forth, and everyone's having a good time, and then the two computer avatars just throw to each other and stop throwing to the avatar that is you. And then they've got things connected to the brain. And they see that the parts of the brain that light up are the same parts that experience physical pain. So all that's happened is they're left out of a computer game with imaginary people. And they're feeling this intense social pain of exclusion. And remember that phrase, sticks and stones may break my bones, but words will never hurt me. I don't know who made that up, right? Because like you hit me and the bruise goes away, but I remember those words. Like I am just trusting that there are people who are in therapy decades later still processing the stuff that happened when they were really, really young that came from this sense of exclusion. So it's really important. So we have that sense of outsider, and we also have that sense of insider. And I'm hoping that some of you, when you imagine your insider experience of belonging, imagine whoops. But that insider space comes with privilege, right? So 90% of you in this room have a form of privilege that I bet you don't think about. Raise your hand if you're right-handed. That's a lot of folks, maybe more than 90% if my quick math is working. So, it's easier for right-handers to live in this world because it's a right-handed world. If we ask the lefties, we don't notice that, right? But the lefties could tell us. We write left to right. So we don't smear the ink when we're writing. Lefties. Looking at Adam because I know he's a lefty. Steak knives are serrated in one direction. In Muslim culture, it's forbidden to eat with your left hand. If you're looking for a piece of sporting equipment, how hard are you going to have to look? How much extra are you going to have to pay? So many things. But righties, so we walk around thinking, yes, I live in this right-hand world, and my life is therefore easy. We don't notice, right? It's just the water that we swim in. But there are actually all these mechanisms, structures, practices that make our right-handed lives easier and those left-handed lives harder. We don't intend to dominate and maintain right-handed supremacy, but it's still happening. So how do we become aware of some of these differences, these automatic insider-outsider pieces that we don't even pay attention to? And how do we adapt? And who adapts to whom? The left-handed people, I really didn't see very many of them, but when you're sitting at a table and they're trying to sort out who's going to sit where, who has to sit in the special place to make sure they don't disrupt things? The lefty, right? So this left-handed person who is already struggling to get through life as a left-handed person, we're going to make them accommodate us and sit where we want them to sit so they don't mess with us. Is this really how we want to do it? No. So the person, I would say, with more power, in whatever way that shows up, in this case, right-handed power, I think has the responsibility to adapt. And so those of us who are solidly grounded in woof, I think, have the responsibility to adapt and understand who's coming, who's new, who's not even coming because we haven't adapted. What are we doing that's exclusive that we're not aware of? Like, we all know the golden rule, right? Do unto others as you would have them do unto you. But that assumes that everyone wants to be done unto the same way you do, right? So let's just assume that there's difference. There's not always similarity. So there's this idea that there's a platinum rule. Do unto others as they would want done to them. Yeah, that's harder to do, right? Because we have to recognize, okay, what are some of the differences here? What are we defaulting to and not even noticing how we're excluding people? And I think in the Unitarian Universalist world, we kind of default to WASP-ness, the white Anglo-Saxon Protestant. Protestant is our heritage, and if you were to walk in here and not listen to the words, it would look very much like a Protestant service. So we highly value education. We have particular musical tastes. We want things to be excellent. We're very rational. The time the service takes is very important to us. These are all things that we don't even think about. This is obvious, right? This is, of course, how one does things well. According to what standards that we're being right-handed without even thinking about it. So I'm going to invite us to, so we're aware of our stereotypes of others, but we're not aware of our own privilege that just feels blind to us and automatic. So let's kind of explore this just a little bit and think about stereotypes of Asian people for a moment. Is anyone willing to give me some? Would you be so rude?
Smart.
Industrious.
Boring.
Bad drivers. Say again.
Good with finances.
Good analytical.
Well, good at math.
Good at math, uh-huh. Mm-hmm. So I'm hearing some laughter here. What? How do we all know this? Did you all study somewhere?
I'm married to an Asian.
You're married to an Asian, uh-huh. Right. So you have studied, but would you agree with all of these stereotypes?
Yes and no.
Yes and no. So there's some differences that might, so this might be grounded in some reality, but do we want to believe these stereotypes? Did we go like, I'm going to study up? No. And do these stereotypes get in the way? I mean, there's a whole, you know, case for Asians getting into Harvard, and they're looking, you know, like they're generally like the generic in the Harvard entrance application process is that they're industrious but don't have interpersonal skills and charm. They're one-dimensional. But we can relate to this, right? Somehow this got in. We did not want this to get in, but somehow these stereotypes got in. So we live in an environment, we have limited data, our brain is working really quickly to try to make some mental models. It's not asking your permission. This is the way that lyrics can get in your head and you can't get them out. You didn't want them in your head. So we want to notice these stereotypes and recognize that we have to work with them and use the active parts of our brains rather than those automatic parts of our brains to overcome them. And we want to realize that real cultural differences exist. So in a broad stroke, American culture is very individualistic. Most Asian cultures are more focused on the collective. And there's even a difference in the way that we raise our infants. So here in America, we wait for a baby to cry, and then we respond, and that builds good attachment, and it teaches the baby, oh, if I express my needs, I get a response. So it's like this individual act that the baby has to make. Whereas in Japan, they talk about this idea of skinship, so that the baby is very frequently skin to skin held, and it's not a matter of the baby asking for what she or he needs, but it's a matter of the caregiver noticing and responding before the baby even asks, so that needs are anticipated. So you can see how that would kind of lend to the collectivist, we're not going to say things overtly, we're going to pay really close attention to what's happening in a group. So there are these differences, and we want to recognize differences and use our recognition and understanding of difference to be more inclusive, so that we can each learn and grow individually, and as groups we can become more effective, creative, with access to different talents, different perspectives. And the danger, of course, is focusing on the difference and defaulting into stereotypes and doing the insider-outsider thing, rather than focusing on difference so that I can do that platinum rule and do unto others how they would have done unto them. This insider-outsider thing is dangerous. And we know that the danger is real because of what's happening today in Washington, D.C. This is the year anniversary of the white supremacist rally in Charlottesville. And there are actions planned for today in D.C. So we confront the extreme fear and the resulting violence that comes when some feel that their insider status is threatened. And I gained insight by listening to Kristen Piccolini in a TED Talk on NPR, National Public Radio. So Kristen was 14 years old when he attended the first gathering of what would become the Hammerskin Nation, a violent white power skinhead group. And looking back, he says that he joined them because they offered him a lifeline of acceptance. He got to feel like an insider. He says, I felt a sort of energy flow through me that I had never felt before, as if I was part of something greater than myself. It started out with one of the leaders and several of the older skinheads in the group appealing to my sense of pride, of being European, of being Italian, in contrast to having his name made fun of. Kristen says, and then it would move on to instilling fear that I would lose that pride, and that somebody would take that away from me if I wasn't careful. So as Kristen found this insider place for himself, he became a leader in this group. He acknowledges that he regularly inflicted violence on people solely because of the color of their skin, their religion, or their sexual orientation. His unique contribution was creating white power punk music, and later opening a record store to sell all kinds of white power music. And in that store, he also sold regular punk rock, heavy metal, and hip-hop to avoid community condemnation of an explicitly and exclusively racist retail establishment. And so customers would come in to buy that other music, that regular music, and many of them were African-American or Jewish or gay. And Kristen said, at first, I was very standoffish, but they kept coming back. Over time, I started to have meaningful interactions with them for the first time in my life. In fact, I had never in my life engaged in a meaningful dialogue with the people that I thought I hated. And it was these folks who showed me empathy when I least deserved it, and they were the ones that I least deserved it from. I started to recognize that I had more in common with them than the people I had surrounded myself with for 8 years. That these people that I thought I hated took it upon themselves to see something inside of me that I didn't even see myself. And it was because of that connection that I was able to humanize them. And that destroyed the demonization and the prejudice that was happening inside of me. So this story, when I think about those folks who were coming into his store and befriending him, reminds me of a quote from the poet and hymnist Edwin Markham. He drew a circle that shut me out. Heretic, rebel, a thing to flout. But love and I had the wit to win. We drew a circle and took him in. So those patrons drew a circle that took Christian in, and he was able to see the lie of that false security of being an insider with the white power skinheads who only defined their insiderness by all those who were outside. So how do we as Unitarian Universalists draw our circle wide? Here at WUF, the cover of our order of service reminds us that together we plant seeds of inspiration, grow in compassionate community, bloom with service to the wider world. We have a chance to serve the wider world today, to ensure that our broader Oregon community remains welcoming to immigrants who have chosen Oregon as their home. On November's ballot, there will be Measure 105, titled Repeals Law Limiting Use of State Local Law Enforcement Resources to Enforce Federal Immigration Laws. So if this ballot measure is approved, it will repeal the law that is currently in place, Oregon's first in the nation 30-year-old sanctuary law that was enacted in the 80s in the wake of a wave of racial profiling and immigration raids. So the original law just says that Oregon law enforcement can't use their money, their equipment, their people to apprehend people whose only violation of the law is being an immigrant without documents. We belong here at WUF to the Interfaith Movement for Immigrant Justice, which they abbreviate to EMERGE, and they need to gather 600 signatures to publish in that same ballot book, No on 105 statement, so that that will be there to be read by the voters. And you can sign that today. You can either get in by paying $1,200 or having 600 signatures. So there are faith communities all over Portland and beyond in Oregon getting those signatures today, and we can be part of that. Together, we plant seeds of inspiration, grow in compassionate community, bloom with service to the wider world. May it be so.
Thank you, Leslie. We've got about 5 minutes or so for questions, and I'm sure Leslie would be also free downstairs afterwards if you had follow-up as well. So if anyone wants to come in, I'll bring the mic.
Thank you. It seems to me that I saw on some news program on the Internet this morning that today is National Lefty Day.
Oh, really? You're welcome, Adam and Aaron. I raised awareness for you.
I truly enjoyed your sermon today. I was most impressed with your changes, especially the meditation portion. It was very heart-opening, and I enjoyed you totally today. I want you back. I don't know where you came from, but I want you back.
Well, I'm part of you. We are members here, and I appreciate that. And I'm a community minister, so I'm not serving the congregation as a minister, but I am connected to you all.
In our branch of Quakers, we meet in silence for 45 minutes. But we do reserve a time for joys and concerns. And at the end of 45 minutes, we ask for the gifts of the silence to be shared if you would like to share them. And it's, there's some of that in what you had to say. Thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome. Thank you all for coming.
It's interesting. I was raised in the Methodist Church and was very comfortable except for the Apostles' Creed. And I love the way that we do our services. To me, they're varied and not the same every week. And all. But I was interested to watch myself through today's service and how really quite uncomfortable I was, feeling the threat of loss of the things I love about our services that, of course, not everyone loves. And I'm okay with their not loving it, but I'm not okay with it going away.
Yeah, no, and I think that one of the things that I think about is if I'm comfortable and happy every week, then maybe somebody else is uncomfortable and unhappy every week. So how do we recognize that to be inclusive, we don't have to do it all the time, every time, but if we look over time, how are we being inclusive?
Yeah.
Thank you for that honest self-reflection and self-awareness.
Yeah.
Okay, time maybe for one more. Do we have any more?
I wanted to say thank you. That's something that's super important to me, and every community that I have been a part of, there's a celebration of, you know, this is who we are and this is what we stand for, and I think that's beautiful and amazing. But there's always been that, but we're not like those people like that too.
Mm-hmm.
And I've, you know, and that's even happened at Wolf.
Oh yeah.
And it's something that bothers me. You know, sometimes it's done in kind of friendly, teasing type of way. Like, we don't really mean it. But, and, you know, and I laugh too when those things come up. But sometimes there is, like, a slight undercurrent of, for some people, that, yeah, they do mean it. And so there's always that danger that when we're trying to be positive still, that maybe we're unintentionally excluding somebody who does, you know, identify with that.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah, and that's just bringing to mind a memory of when I was a UU congregant, well before I was a minister. A fairly famous UU minister came and preached in the congregation in Atlanta and told a joke, and the butt of which was Catholic. Like, it was like, you can never imagine telling a joke at the expense of someone's religious orientation, apparently except for a flavor of Christianity. So, you know, as we're so busy saying what we're not, you know, I appreciate what you're saying, that, you know, and people laugh at that joke. So we want to be careful. We want to be clear about who we are, and I love how in the opening words we say, you know, if you come with an open mind and an open heart, you are welcome here. So there is an if, you know, but we want to draw that circle wide. So thank you so much for sharing.
Thanks also, and thanks for everyone again. Should we know?
Yes,
you have another question?
Yes, I will. Oh, yeah. If you are one of the petition signers, would you raise your hand? Okay. I mean, petition collector. I'm sorry. Collector. Carrie? Is Carrie the only one?
Carrie's going to be super popular.
And maybe some other people can grab petitions as well.
Welcome another person to
run the board. Yes. Clipboard. The power of the clipboard. Okay. And I'm going to do a quick benediction.
Please.
Yes. If here you have found freedom, take it with you into the world. If you have found comfort, go and share it with others. If you have dreamed dreams, help one another that they may come true. If you have known love, give some back to a bruised and hurting world. Go in peace.